Welcome to Uncut, a special edition of the Conversations podcast by Texas Scorecard, where we're sitting down with real candidates running for statewide office and asking them real questions, unfiltered. You can find more at texasscorecard.com. Hello, everybody. Thank you for joining us. I'm Brandon Waltons, the managing editor here at Texas Scorecard, and right now we're being joined by State Representative James White, who is leaving the legislature and running currently in the Republican primary for Texas Agricultural Commissioner. Representative White, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. Man, this is big time on 1836 Studios.
Well, thank you. We appreciate it. You know, for folks who may not know your background, mm-hmm. may not have seen your stuff, give folks an idea of your background and why you're running for agricultural commissioner.
Hey, that's real simple. Thank you so much for having me. Real quick, I'm a sixth generation Texan. I'm a proud veteran, served under Ronald Reagan for 3 of the 6 or 7 years I was in the military. Those 3 years under Ronald Reagan, I was in the Berlin Brigade, mm-hmm. and I was there I served during his Tear Down That Wall speech. Mm-hmm. Also served during the fall of the wall and the eventual demise of the Soviet Union. I returned back to Texas, began a 17-year journey as a school teacher, government and economics, along with being a football, basketball, and soccer coach. Maybe the latter were more important, right? Mm-hmm. Okay. But I moved to East Texas to pursue one of my life dreams, was to be a small beef cattle producer like my grandparents. And then I had the opportunity presented to me to run for the legislature in 2010, mm-hmm. and successfully defeated a 16-year entrenched Democrat that put me on a path to serve the people in Southeast Texas, Polk, Tyler, Jasper, Newton, and Harton County, mm-hmm. for 6 terms. And this last term was very exciting. I had a very exciting committee. I chaired the Homeland Security and Public Safety Committee, mm-hmm. Where I made sure that constitutional carry got out to the floor where it could get a vote, mm-hmm. okay, and become law, and that happened. Also, ensuring that, you know, being a good advocate for getting the resources for border security, mm-hmm. And tripling that to $3 billion from $800 million, and also just being involved in a lot of great legislation, mm-hmm. whether it was getting more integrity into our elections, pushing back against critical race theory, making sure that we give our judges very good guidance in the form of bail reform. We were co and joint authors on all those bills, to include the heartbeat bill, and also am a signatory on an amicus brief, mm-hmm. For the Mississippi abortion ban bill.
Mm-hmm. And so in 10 years plus in the legislature, mm-hmm. you then decide to run for statewide, yes. office and to run for, mm-hmm. agriculture commissioner. You made that announcement, I guess, last summer or so, right?
Yeah, about June. Mm-hmm.
And what motivated that decision?
A lot of things motivated that decision. I looked at my time in the legislature, serving on the House Committee on Agriculture, serving on that committee, having direct oversight of Texas Department of Agriculture. Mm-hmm. My 6 terms, two of which I served as chair, mm-hmm. of the House Committee on Corrections. Texas Department of Criminal Justice comes under that charge, mm-hmm. of that committee. And TDCJ has one of the largest agribusinesses in the state. Again, being a beef cattle producer myself, being a timber owner, I just believe that farmers and ranchers, these are people that really ensure that we remain a prosperous, free, and independent state. Mm-hmm. They need a commissioner that is going to promote and protect them, not raise taxes and fees on them, not introduce any extra burdensome regulation that they don't need, mm-hmm. and they can look at the Texas Department of Agriculture and know that there are expectations of ethics and transparency, just like they do in their agriculture business, mm-hmm. where they have to do the same ethics and transparency.
Going back to your, mm-hmm. to your time in the legislature, mm-hmm. because you've got a unique perspective having served there, mm-hmm. Why is it, this is a question we get all the time, why is it, do you think, that so many people get elected to office and then, you know, those campaign promises, those Republican Party priorities never seem to get accomplished?
Well, okay, that's a good question. Okay. And this is why, you know, the legislature is a very dynamic place. Mm-hmm. The House, I like it. It's very, very dynamic. It kind of mm-hmm. reminds me of a classroom. It's just 150 people running around doing what they want to do. Mm-hmm. And you got the speaker who's probably, you know, synonymous to a teacher trying to tell everybody to sit down and be quiet. And of course, we're not paying attention. Okay. But I want to think that there could be some issues with expectations as we go through the prism of elections. Look, let me give you an example. When the speaker called me, you know, I thought I had made it, okay? Because I told the speaker before he was elected in December, mm-hmm. Before he was elected formally in December of 2020, right? That I was not going to run again for the mm-hmm. House. And then when he was elected formally, I told him again, I'm not going to run for re-election to the mm-hmm. House. So I told him I didn't need anything. I don't need a chair. No one sent me to Austin to be a chair. Uh-huh. Okay. They sent me to Austin to do the things that you've just talked about.
Yep.
And so real quickly, I told him I was okay where I was at. If he just wanted to keep me there, chair and House Committee on Corrections, you know, okay. But he called me. I thought I had beat it. He called me about 30 minutes before he was about to release committee assignments. He says, mm-hmm. Hey, I need you to consider doing something. I'm like, okay, what is it? Switching over, okay, from corrections chair mm-hmm. to Homeland Security and Public Safety chair. And I told him, I said, Mr. Speaker, I want to do anything that I can do to get our conservative agenda passed, make you successful, because that makes all of us as Republicans successful. But if I can't get constitutional carry out mm-hmm. of that committee in a timely manner to get it to a floor for a real vote, I'm sorry, I can't chair that committee because I don't think I can get back home safely. Mm-hmm. Okay, okay, all right. So I think as Republican members, we need to read the platform, really sincerely read it. Mm-hmm. And we all need to become more leaders on the House floor and say, hey, I'm gonna pick up this plank, or I'm gonna pick up this part of the platform and start to work through those issues. So I would tell you, as far as James White is concerned, mm-hmm. that one priority that was in our committee, we got it done because mm-hmm. we need a grassroots. So we got it done. I mm-hmm. think that's
sure.
And so if you're a committee chair, mm-hmm. you should be first putting those priorities first mm-hmm. if you're the Republican committee chair. Okay, those priorities first, okay, to make sure that they are moved to the floor in a timely manner.
But what about some of those other priorities? Certainly constitutional carry, that's been the longest mm-hmm. running priority of the party.
Time. Yes.
But you've got some priorities like banning child gender modification
yes.
that, you know, have such huge grassroots support. Mm-hmm. And yet, you know, frankly, the speaker has set essentially kind of said he's not going to pass that.
Well, look, I don't know if I don't listen to everything that the speaker says. I mean, yeah. there's a lot of things that get printed. But I would say this. I believe I signed on at least as a co-author mm-hmm. of that bill. If I can remember, it was either close or slightly over what would be needed if mm-hmm. the bill was brought to the floor and passed. For some good reasons, it is difficult to pass legislation. If you read some of the bills that you guys read them because you keep the score, right? they don't need to pass. Uh-huh. But I know that bill, that was a bill that if we wanted it to pass, to get it to pass, mm-hmm. you got to get it out of committee fast. Mm-hmm. Okay. And I think that bill sat over there maybe trying to get the consensus or maybe the Republican members on the committee. Mm-hmm. I don't know,
yeah.
but it's all of that, okay? And so going back to my experience, I don't think I've really had one of our priorities in corrections. Mm-hmm. But when you're in these committees, like Homeland Security and Public Safety, Public Health, we have to make sure as a caucus that we put our Republican chairs in a position to get those bills out mm-hmm. in a timely manner. Because this is what I found out real quick.
Uh-huh.
And I think you guys already know this. a bill with a fiscal note, according to House rules, even if you vote it out in March or April, if it has a fiscal note, the soonest it could even get to the floor is after May 1. Mm-hmm. Okay, so there are all these little things that are going on that you have to understand. So constitutional carry initially had a fiscal note.
Uh-huh.
Because some folks were saying, well, you know, folks won't be getting licenses, so then the state's going to be losing money. And we was like, no, time out.
Mm-hmm.
First principle, we shouldn't be raising money on people's constitutional rights. Two, there are some anecdotal examples around the country of other states that have went to a form of constitutional carry, and actually the licenses have went up because people get more enthused. They say, hey, I want to travel across state lines. So I had to work with DPS and appropriations and leadership to say, let's look at the fiscal note from this perspective. Mm-hmm. So the fiscal note at least became indeterminate, if not zero. Mm-hmm. So it's those type of things.
Sure. Let me ask you one more question about the legislature, then we'll move to the race. There's been calls for, especially in light of companies implementing these vaccine mandates, there's been calls for a forced special session.
Yes.
A number of lawmakers have signed on.
I have.
Including yourself. But so far, the governor seems hesitant to call one. Why do you think that is?
Well, I think I listened to the Scorecard too podcast. I think one of the reasons he wanted to see what the courts were going to do.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I think the courts have spoken or speaking. So the governor knows where I am on this issue for a variety of reasons. Look, everyone needs to take a deep breath. And I'm talking about the politician people, okay? Mm-hmm. For years, employers have had health conditions in lieu of employment.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you got to be able to pick up 20 pounds or, you know, something like that. You see them on the job performance or the job notice, right? But there's a difference between a requirement and a mandate. So there may be a vaccination requirement, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's a mandate, because I do not forfeit my constitutional rights, freedom of religion, and obviously medical conditions, okay? And to your point, what's happening is these companies, okay, for whatever reasons, maybe they're being intimidated by the federal government, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
They're not really sincerely evaluating religious conscience and medical exemptions, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm hoping that the governor, because I think we need to speak. I think the people want us to speak. Because see, I'm also of this mind of thought also, Brandon. I know what the Supreme Court may say, okay? Like our pro-life legislation for years, we knew what was gonna happen probably if it went to the Supreme Court, okay? But sometimes it's important for the people's representatives to be heard because the people wanna be heard. So look, maybe what we pass gets blown up by the Texas Supreme Court or the U.S. Supreme Court. I don't, or the Fifth Circuit. I don't know. But the point is, the people want to be heard, that they want their rights. They don't want to be put in a position, jobs or jabs. And we need to be heard so the people are heard.
Going back to the race for agriculture commissioner, obviously the incumbent's been there for two terms. Sid Miller is running for a third term. But you've obviously taken some jabs, I guess, at him on the campaign trail.
Not vaccinate and not mandate. So okay.
So what are your main concerns with the incumbent over the last 8 years?
Well, as Republicans, just think about this: when we got Build Back, Broke Better, more taxes, more regulations, rightfully so, we say no.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and we're leading on that. But I think, going into the future, Brandon, the left will be coming at us on all fronts.
Mm-hmm.
Energy, food, just name them, you know, pandemic. I mean, on all, you know, transportation, you know, this Buttigieg guy, he's finding a way to get leftist things in, just get the freeways built, man, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So it's important for us, and this is what I enjoy about the Texas Scorecard and Empower Texans and all of you folks, is going forward, it's important that we have leaders that have sort of this policy consistency, mm-hmm. okay? You know, we can't run down Biden on Build Back Broke taxes and regulations if we're doing that here. So, you know, the current incumbent in 2015, after not getting a 50% increase in his funding due to legislation that he proudly voted, and I did when we voted for the budget that cut $27 billion back in 2011, he wanted that those monies just to automatically come back to him because he was the commissioner. He didn't get the money from the Republican appropriators, so he said, look, I'm going to double and triple fees from producers and entrepreneurs in order to make that. Come to find out, the state auditor's office said more was collected than was really needed to run the programs that he was talking, the licensure programs he was talking about. And in fact, they said there was really no methodology of why did you double this one? Why did you triple this one? There was really no methodology. And instead of saying, okay, let me roll these back. Let me sit down and come up with a methodology that everyone can, that's transparent. He said he needed to keep a lot of that overage, over revenues. He needed to keep that for his agency's cash flow and for unanticipated cost. Well, bite inflation, supply chain disruptions. I think ag producers and entrepreneurs have a lot of cash flow problems of their own, and they would like to have their money to meet their unanticipated costs. So it's those issues, and also just the thought that, and I've never said that the commissioner was involved in any type of scandal, bribery scandal. I haven't made that contention, but you know, reading through some documents, I do chair the Homeland Security and Public Safety Committee. He did it one time as well. You know, I read these arrest affidavits, and his campaign manager has free reign to walk around the agency, get agency employees to write letterhead for his clients. Apparently, you know, not signing in as a registered lobbyist, all those things that you're supposed to do when you go into that. Those are some of the things. And I think if you love farmers and ranchers, you love Texas, you may not get it right all the time, but you're not going to double, triple fees. Okay. You're going to tell your campaign consultant and part-time lobbyist for his clients, you've got to follow the rules. It's those things that I think is important. Real quick, let me tell you.
Yeah.
For the right reasons, we have told a lot of Republicans that we were very upset that they voted for in-state tuition for people who enter our country without following our laws to begin with. You know, he voted for that. Okay. Contrast. I mean, I have a record of at least advocating with the governor, lieutenant governor, and the appropriators to increase border security by threefold. Okay. 2011, that was my first term, a very, very active term, if you remember.
Sure.
Right. 2011. Grassroots activists. I was getting letters. My district was in East Texas, but I was getting letters and calls from grassroots activists from West Texas, from North Texas, from South Texas, all over Texas, saying, look, you guys got a 101 Republican majority. We want to make sure you get the work done, not frustrated like we are at the end of a session.
Right.
You need to have some leadership changes at the top, meaning the speaker. I was one of 15 that hit the red light. He was one that gave the seconded speech for Joe Strauss and obviously gave the 76 vote. That's interesting to me. Okay. And so he chaired the Homeland Security Public Safety Committee back in 2011. Like I do now. He sat on constitutional carry, he sat on open carry, and he sat on campus carry.
Okay.
And voted him out late in April. You know how that game goes.
Right. Yeah. Right. And we only got a few minutes left, so I want to make sure we hit this.
Okay.
So that's the incumbent. What kind of you know, setting aside the incumbent's record right now, what kind of new things would you be doing in the agriculture department?
One, Day one. It's like what we do in the military when we have a little systemic issue, mm-hmm. okay? You have a few hours or a day of stand down. So we want to have at least a few hours where we reacquaint the executive staff mm-hmm. of TDA, the expectations that Texans have on ethics and transparency. Two, we want to start rolling back day one, all those doubling and tripling of fees that and the increased bureaucratic regulations that come with them. So those are things we want to do on day one. And then we want to get to work on protecting our farmers and ranchers from burdensome regulations from the federal government, mm-hmm. definitely stopping them here in Texas, making sure that we don't have foreign entities like the Chinese Communist Party, the CCP, coming in, buying up our ag land. And then we want to continue promoting our industry. Mm-hmm. We want to promote it in the right way internationally and nationally. We want to make sure that we're encouraging those veterans that are transitioning out of the military maybe to consider a career as a farmer or a rancher. Because I know as a veteran, sometimes we're used to working outside, mm-hmm. but coming out of service, you do need to be in a situation where you have some time to contemplate and think mm-hmm. and kind of reassess some things. And that worked for me as a small beef cattle producer and owner of timber. And I think that could help a lot of our mm-hmm. veterans in their transition. So it's these types of things. And also working with our school lunch program, mm-hmm. which is 92% of the agency's budget. Federal, 92% of the agency's budget is your federal tax dollars. Mm-hmm. that comes back to Texas for the school lunch program. We want to make sure working with the folks locally, genuinely working with them, mm-hmm. that whatever type of a bureaucratic discretion that we have to lower bureaucracy, lower the number of audits, so they can focus on feeding children tasty and healthy. You can do it. Mm-hmm. My mama did it. Your mama did it. Tasty and healthy meals, mm-hmm. So they can have a very good academic environment and opportunity.
Last question here. Looking at the campaign itself, yes. as we're recording this right now, there's less than a month until early voting, mm-hmm. which is crazy to think about. You know, you've got you're up against Sid Miller. There's also a third candidate in the race. Mm-hmm. Sid's endorsed by President Trump. Mm-hmm. How do you see this campaign shaking out? Is it going to a runoff? Well, is it, you know, what do you think?
You know, look, we don't know. I mean, I was just very shocked. Not shocked necessarily. I mean, the president, you know, I served on President Trump's mm-hmm. Black Voices for Trump. It was a national campaign. Mm-hmm. I played a small part with that group of black conservatives all over the country in ensuring that, you know, black, Hispanic, Asian, et cetera, voters knew the record of Trump and how it directly impacted them positively, which it did. Mm-hmm. And it resulted in the president getting more non-white vote than any Republican presidential candidate since 1960. Mm-hmm. So, I value the work of President Trump. Look like he's well on his way in a certain way. I don't know about the certainty of my race, but look like he's well on his way for a comeback, successful comeback for the White House. So we'll just watch this. But it's just very, very unfortunate that a high profile state Republican leader, as the incumbent is in this race, would not have told the president all this stuff that's circulating around with these hemp licenses. I think he owed that to the president when he asked for his endorsement.
So for folks who want to follow your campaign or see what you're getting involved in, where can they do that?
Easy, jameswhiteforTexas.com, jameswhiteforTexas.com. And when you go to jameswhiteforTexas.com, there will be Facebook, Twitter, you know, links,
et cetera.
Yes, right.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it.
Hey, thank you so much, my friend.
Thank you for listening to Uncut, a special edition of Conversations with Texas Scorecard. You can also go to texasscorecard.com to get more journalism and stories just like this. If you like today's episode, please rate and review this podcast on whatever podcasting platform you listen on.